But first, last month, a coroner returned a verdict of medical misadventure in the case of 35-year-old Malik Thawley, who died during surgery for an ectopic pregnancy in May of last year. A statement read out after the inquest on behalf of her husband, Alan Thawley, described how he has not lived a single minute of his life since her death. Alan Thawley is now calling for an independent investigation into Malik's death. He joined me in studio earlier this week, and I started by asking him what his wife, Malik, was actually like.
Malik, you know, she was just a wonderful woman, really. She was the most social and beautiful and just a wonderful person I'd ever met. And all she ever really wanted to do was help people. And really her biggest goal now in life was really to be the best mother that she could be. And so we were really at a stage where we were just about excited, as excited as we could be, to start a new family.
And a very joyful time of your lives because, you know, she was pregnant, you were madly in love with each other, and this was the next chapter.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, we were together maybe 7 years in the U.S. before coming to Ireland. And really, it was arriving here that got us to change our minds. At first, we didn't necessarily want children, but we had changed our minds actually living here. And so it really was, for both of us, the happiest moments in our lives. It really was. I would even say that the morning before she died, before we found out she had the ectopic, really was probably the peak of my happiness in my life.
And what has happened since obviously has destroyed that happiness in a way we can only imagine at. The discovery of the ectopic pregnancy, how did that happen?
Yeah, we actually went to a private scan that we were so excited, we actually got what would be considered early scan for a pregnancy. And it was actually there that they found the ectopic pregnancy.
Now, an ectopic pregnancy is potentially a life-threatening situation and it has to be dealt with. But it's a fairly routine kind of procedure these days.
Absolutely. And we were, you know, lucky in the sense that we caught it so soon. It was found in the fallopian tube, but it hadn't ruptured. And so we were kind of at the advantage that we could have it removed in a very standard procedure that was not actually an emergency.
Yeah. In order to confirm, having had the private scan, you then went to the National Maternity Hospital to ascertain for sure, that this was indeed an ectopic pregnancy and this would be where the procedure anyway would be carried out.
Correct. Yeah, they did another scan and they found it. And so we had made the decision to go into surgery, which was the right decision for that situation. But, I mean, there was really no emergency. Like, I think we even waited over an hour before the surgery began because they wanted more time between when she ate breakfast and actually giving her the general anesthetic. So it was a very casual way to start the surgery. There was no emergency, really.
And was there any sense of that this is a technical, highly technical, highly complicated piece of work? Or were you reassured all the way that, look, we have done this 1,000 times?
Oh, we were given a lot of assurances. Like, I remember in the taxi heading to the hospital, I was furiously reading on my phone, like, what is an ectopic pregnancy? What can you do? And I remember arguing for methotrexate, which is a drug that can be given that can abort the ectopic pregnancy. But they told us the standard procedure is surgery. And he even assured me, saying, listen, we do this 30, 40 times a week. It's a standard procedure. She'll be out, in and out, in less than half an hour.
Now, you presumably, you can't go into the theater. At what point did you begin to realize that something was not going to plan?
Well, I would say it was a little more than an hour after the surgery began, and I still hadn't received an update. And so that's when I was beginning to get worried. But I did have some people who tried to come and give me an update, but the updates were extremely vague. Like, I could tell they actually had no idea what was going on, but they just wanted to talk to me. And they were continually pushing to try to get me to bring someone to be there with me. But unfortunately, you know, I'm not Irish. I don't have any family here. And even my two closest friends happened to be out of the country at that time. So I was quite literally alone. I really didn't have a single person to come and join me.
And at that point, were you beginning to become concerned when they're saying, maybe you should have somebody with you?
I mean, a bit. And they were making implications that she had lost a lot of blood, but they hadn't told me why or how much or any of this sort of thing. So in my head at the time, I thought maybe the ectopic pregnancy had ruptured, which is dangerous. But I was thinking the way they were giving me assurances is that we have this under control.
Now, given what happened at the inquest, we know now the timing of the misadventure that occurred. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, so it actually seems like within really the first couple of seconds of the surgery beginning. So, I mean, the first instrument that's used to make the first incision, that instrument actually cut my wife's aorta. And so really what that means is within the first seconds of the surgery, she was already bleeding to death. And
normally when there is a hemorrhage, for example, you know, massive amounts of blood are required until they can control the hemorrhage. So blood, they'll use the universal donor, but they cross-match blood and so on. And it's a really, really dramatic emergency in surgery. And this obviously is what happened to Malak.
Well, yeah. And as I found out, in my opinion, far too late in the actual coroner's court itself, that there was actually a policy for the hospital not to take the blood type of people going into surgery at certain times, you know, for instance, on the weekend. And so my wife, for instance, they took her blood, but they actually didn't know her blood type. I think it took about 40 minutes for them to actually figure out her blood type. And in the end, it didn't matter because they didn't even have blood supplies anyway. And what's shocking about this, not only learning this, like I said, far too late, that even a number of years ago, there was a case at Hollis Street at the National Maternity Hospital with a young woman named Nora Highland, where she died, and it was identified at that coroner's court that lack of blood supplies was a big problem in the hospital.
Then an expert was brought in, a vascular surgeon. How long did it take for that to happen?
Well, the vascular surgeon...
And this would be to literally stitch up the break in the aorta, which had been caused by the scalpel.
Correct, yeah. Well, here's the thing, like, I'm not even sure I can really rely on the chronology, on the actual timings within the report, because a lot of it doesn't necessarily make sense. For instance, one of the things, in this type of surgery, it's a keyhole surgery, so it's a small incision. But if you suspect something like a vascular injury, it immediately goes to the old style of surgery, which is they basically cut them open from, mm-hmm. you know, the entire belly, and so they can try to find the problem and fix it. And if you look at the medical reports, it took... I believe it was approaching an hour before switching from a keyhole surgery to this type of surgery. Speaking to experts in this type of surgery, they say that this is the sort of thing that you do within a minute.
Yeah.
And so the fact that it took him approaching an hour is horrendous. It really is. The entire time she was bleeding to death with nothing to stop the bleeding.
Now, when the vascular surgeon arrived, we are talking about your wife literally being on death's door, if not, in fact, clinically dead.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. The initial doctor and the on-call doctor were not able to determine where the bleeding was coming from. So because of that, she was just bleeding to death for almost an hour, waiting for this vascular surgeon to arrive. And even when this vascular surgeon arrived, she didn't even have the tools that were required to stop the bleeding. So one of the big issues
here... What, clamps, things like that?
Yeah, exactly. Vascular clamps are the main one. And even in the initial report, they had stated that they had to go back to St. Vincent's to get additional tools. But as I found out in the coroner's court, they actually had to go to Black Rock Clinic, which driving from National Maternity Hospital to Black Rock Clinic, getting a tool and driving back, and the entire time my wife is bleeding to death.
This presumably is the reason why you want a special investigation into this. I mean, the hospital has put its hands up and taken responsibility for the mistakes that were made. A verdict of medical misadventure has been brought in by the coroner's court. But you don't think that is enough to get at the actual sequence of events that lost you your life partner?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's actually a number of issues here, and I've been alluding to this report that the hospital created, and part of the problem is there's a lot of information that was missing, that was I was never told, my legal team was never told about, and there's a lot of information that changed, you know, once again, during the coroner's court when they gave testimony. So one of the very big issues I have is this hospital killed my wife through their multiple and serious failings. And they are the same people who have to give me all the evidence as to how my wife died. And they're also doing this at what it seems like a very politically sensitive time where there's a lot of distrust in the current master of the hospital to move to a new site. And it seems like all this possibly was in play. And so I received this report with all this evidence, and my legal team needs to be able to come up with questions that are probing to try to find out the real cause of what happened. So we arrive at the coroner's court, and then we find out a lot of that information was false, or there's just a lot of information that was left out. So we get this tremendous dump of information where we need to spend weeks and months preparing these questions. And I feel that I was actually denied my right to be able to question what actually happened within the court system itself. And so that is my first giant issue with why this hospital report was just, for me, useless, really. Mm. And the second issue is that they claimed that there were all these lessons learned, all these things that need to be changed, et cetera. Well, what they stated, once again, in the coroner's court, they claimed, I believe, that there are 34 outcomes or things that need to be changed. 20 they claimed have been implemented, 14 will need to be implemented. But I actually don't know what those 34 things are. I don't know if anyone does. They're not in the initial report. And literally within hours of hearing that testimony, we sent a letter asking for, what are these 34 things? When were they implemented, or when will they be implemented? Are they permanent changes? Are they being sent to other national maternity hospitals? Are we actually going to learn from these mistakes? And why aren't they being made public? Like, if I can't imagine any woman going into this hospital for any procedure not being afraid after what happened. And I think this is the sort of thing where we need reassurance from the hospital. And there's actually one key figure who should be reassuring the public who has actually been silent since day one in public. And this is actually the master of the hospital, who is both the person in charge and also the public face of the hospital. The master, Rona Mahani, has not spoken publicly about this. In fact, to me, it feels like she's actually ignoring the issue. She's actually making it feel like I'm not important and my wife's death is not important. And so really, for her role in a public hospital as a public servant, she needs to reassure the public. Because as we found out, the cause of my wife's death wasn't the ectopic pregnancy. That was just the reason for the procedure. But it was from the moment the procedure began to the end, it was all the failings of the hospital.
What about Simon Harris's reaction to this? He has said, I would suggest that perhaps the inquest and the investigation in the hospital have indeed established what went wrong.
Well, I would have to respectfully but wholeheartedly disagree with what he's stating. And I actually feel that for him to truly make an informed decision, he has to meet with me first, which we've already requested, and hopefully he'll respond very soon.
As I mentioned earlier, the hospital has come out with its hands up and taken responsibility for your wife's death. I presume you're pursuing a civil action against the hospital. So no matter what way they have told the story, they are still going to be liable for, I would suggest, a massive compensation case. Not that money can ever replace the love of your life, Malik. What would be served by an ongoing investigation that might take a couple of years?
Really, for me, it's that the new evidence that was given within the coroner's court is starting to point to something much deeper and much profound that's wrong in the hospital. And for me, it's actually the management of the hospital. For me, it's actually the way it's run. And for me, it's policy decisions that's made specifically by the master of the hospital. Now, earlier I stated that she needs to speak out. And I think her silence is, first of all, deafening, but it is very, you know, indicative of, in my opinion, of these sort of issues that's happening within the hospital.
Now, the master will probably point out, as she has done many times, while complaining about the very restricted conditions in Hollis Street, that the standards of medical care are very high, the level of equipment and so on, high-tech equipment they have is bang up to date, and their statistics in terms of either maternal mortality or infant mortality actually are very good. So no doubt she would reiterate those facts.
Yeah, I mean, I guess really the problem that I see here is that this particular failing of the hospital is the ultimate failing. It's the worst failing that any hospital can make, which is you take somebody who's healthy, who's not in any risk and not in any emergency, doing a basic procedure, and she ends up dead. And so really, there's a huge issue already to begin with. And when you look at the reasons, it's actually policy decisions, not having blood supplies, not taking blood type, not having staff, not using the best instruments for the job, not having instruments. And really, to me, that's all management. I mean, I don't know what else to look at.
How has your life been since the death of Malik? Because in addition to her loss, you've got to cope with everything that goes around this. I mean, if she had died in a way that was predictable, an illness, for example, a terminal illness or even a traffic accident, it's one thing. When you're coping with the possibility that this need not have happened at all, it makes it much more difficult.
No, absolutely. Like, really, my wife's death was just entirely meaningless. And for me, even embarrassing. Just when you read through what actually happened, it's just embarrassing that she died this way. And it's absolutely right. It is so hard. The amount of pain that you have to go through to survive something like this, it's just, I can't even begin to describe it. But what is actually frustrating for me is that just in trying to find out the truth, just trying to find out what happened and why it happened, which I actually still don't know, but just trying to find that out, I feel like I've received almost hostility from the hospital in refusing to answer what are very basic questions. I mean, just really, what happened? That's all I'm really trying to ask. And not just this, when I ask questions or even when I make an emotional plea saying, listen, I'm a man who can barely stand up. You need to please give me this information. I receive essentially silence. And for instance, once again, the master of the hospital hasn't commented on my case once. Do you know how that makes me feel? So it's not even just the weight of my wife dying, which is so horrible that no one should have to experience something like that. It's the additional weight and the additional emotional harm that the hospital is causing me.
Alan Tholey, thank you very much for joining us
thank you.
The studio today. Well, we contacted the National Maternity Hospital looking for a response to our interview with Alan Tholey, and this is what they had to say. The National Maternity Hospital acknowledges the terrible and devastating loss Mr. Tholey has suffered and the pain and grief he's endured since the death of his wife while in our care. We have unreservedly apologized for the shortcomings in our care that led to Malik's death, and from the outset we have fully accepted our liability in this case. We have conducted a robust internal review, which began the day after Mrs. Thorley's death. We know that nothing can bring Malik back. However, we are determined to continue to implement in our clinical practice all that we have learned from this investigation. And a response from the Minister for Health. Since we spoke to Alan Tholey the other day, his solicitor has received a response from the Minister for Health, Simon Harris, in which it was said that the issues raised in relation to the inquest will be examined. Well, clearly Alan Tholey wants more answers than were provided by what was revealed in the inquest.